This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guests today are Mary Kelly and Holly Hibner. They're the Michigan public librarians who founded the Awful Library Books site, which you can find at awfullibrarybooks.net. You can also find Mary on Twitter at LibraryMary40 and Holly at H. Hibner. Mary and Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Your blog, Awful Library Books, has been around for 5 years now. Over that time, what would you say is the most awful library book you've ever come across?
I'm going to say it's probably the, what we call the post-Satan for kids, but it's a book called Don't Make Me Go Back, Mommy, a child's book about satanic ritual abuse. I think that's the all-time most commented on and most frighteningly weird. I don't know what else to call it.
That has to be my same answer. I can't even think of another post that has come close to being, you know, with as many hits. And just the creep factor of that book is, it's horrifying. So I got to give the same answer.
Yeah, it's kind of scary sometimes as you wonder why people bought it in the first place.
Honestly.
So what made you guys want to collaborate on this site? What made you want to put together a collection of the most awful library books?
Well, Mary and I worked together for about 10 years at the same library. We both work at different libraries now, but we shared a desk for a good 10 years. And as we started really looking closely at the collection, we used to try to one-up each other on what we would find in the stacks because the collection hadn't been weeded in a long time. And so we'd say, look what I found, look what I found. And we were just laughing so much that we thought other people might find this funny too. And so we put together sort of a slideshow collection of these weird things that we had found. And we put it up on the screen at a conference where we were speaking about collection development. And people were just laughing so much. And we thought, there's something here. People seem to find this funny. At the same time, we wanted to learn to use WordPress. So we thought, let's make a blog and share the love.
I think we got tweeted out by a couple of people who have a lot of followers, and then the next thing you know, somebody from Time Magazine is calling us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say early on, you guys had a lot of big press, including you're listed in IMDb, and can you tell people why that is?
We were guests on the Jimmy Kimmel Show in November of 2009. I guess Jimmy Kimmel loves what he calls found comedy, just normal people that do funny things. And he thinks the blog is funny. So he had us on the show.
Who knew? I thought we were being punked, to be honest with you. You know, when somebody says they're calling from a TV show and we're like, oh, please, I'm at work right now. I don't have time for this.
Do you think he still follows your blog?
I don't. Who knows?
How long ago have you not been working at the same library?
About 4.5 years.
Yeah.
But you're both still somewhat local with each other?
Yeah. My library is maybe 20 miles or so from hers, 15 miles. And she actually subs at my library occasionally, so she technically does work at my library, just not very often.
It's a nice change of pace since my library is very tiny and, you know, I'm one of two librarians, and we only have like 10 total staff, whereas Holly has a bigger building. So it's a great way to stretch. I love subbing over there.
Can you explain to the listeners just basically, I'm sure most people have heard of the site or seen the site, but just sort of what it is exactly and how you guys work it with submissions and things like that?
Yeah, so it's a collection of the worst of library holdings. So we seem to have a following in the UK for some reason. And New Zealand is popular. So people from all over the place send us pictures of things they found in their library collections. It is, you know, the majority of submitters are librarians, not patrons. But occasionally there are, you know, patrons who have stumbled on the blog and say, look what I found at my local library. So that's how we get the stuff that shows up on the site. A few things come from our own collections, too, here and there as we find things. We have skeletons in our closet, too. But most of it comes from submitters.
might actually come from just me doing a library job on, you know, just regular old reference work. I'll be looking up a topic and using our shared catalog or our statewide catalog, and I'll just happen to run across something that I can't believe is actually still around, and so I'll either ILO it to see if it's real, and generally it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, so when you find a title like that, do you go ahead and ILL it so you can look at it and flip through it and everything too?
I try to for mine. I know Holly just takes the submissions for the most part. I keep thinking this is an idea that keeps, you should be eventually wearing out, because as you get more people talking about library collections, you would think that people would clean them up eventually. But every week there's something new that just cracks me up.
And there are obviously a lot of bad books out there.
There are a lot of awful library books, for sure.
Yeah.
What are some of the funniest excuses that people use sometimes to justify keeping something awful that you've heard?
There's a couple of them. Probably one is it has historical value, or my personal favorite being someone might need it.
You know, I was going to say that it's historical one makes me absolutely crazy, because in a public library, and most of these submissions come from either public or academic, and so the point of being an awful library book is that it was found in a library where it doesn't belong for whatever reasons. So saying, but it's historical, and you're a library like Mary's that's a very small public library, you know, how many historiography assignments do you really have high school kids doing in a small library? It's not the mission of that library to have stuff because it's historical.
And that's something I was going to ask. What is your qualification for awful? What makes a library book awful? Holly kind of covered that a little bit, but what is your definition for what would go on the site?
It doesn't fit with the collection objective. And that doesn't mean it doesn't fit somewhere else or doesn't need to be retained somewhere. But whatever your own library mission is, you really must adhere to that. And is it helping your people right then and there? So awful can be something perfect for one library and ridiculous for another. It really does depend on what library it is. Back in the old days, I think we all wanted to be archives at some level, and maybe that was the goal before computers and, you know, worldwide web access to information. But it's ridiculous to try to do that as a small library, is to keep every single piece of information. It doesn't, it's ridiculous. It's out of control budgets if you want to do that.
We are creating collections that reflect our library's mission. And so if you have dead weight or just weird things that maybe they serve the mission, you know, 20, 30 longer ago, but the communities change, the purpose of the library maybe changes over time, what people expect from the library has changed over time, that stuff no longer serves its purpose that it originally was purchased for. Why would they have bought it in the first place? Like, there's no way it could have served the mission, even back then.
The one that probably bothers me the most are things like medical information that is so clearly out of date, sitting in a public library where people are going to need stuff. I think really one of the impetus, even back in the day, made me crazy was career books and resume books. In Metro Detroit, we were going through one of the worst economic problems, and I had people looking for resume books and information about changing careers, and there were stuff from the 60s and 70s that absolutely had no business being in the hands of the general public. It was so outdated.
So just to be clear, are you guys saying that there is a library somewhere that that little Satanist book belongs? How often do you guys update the site? Does it depend on how many submissions you're getting, or do you always have a good steady stream of submissions that you're getting?
We post every day, except the weekends. We were putting things on the weekends, but I kind of fade off. I just wanted a day off.
We do Monday through Friday,
and Friday is our day of, I usually profile some crazy fiction or something weird, mostly fiction, and it's not necessarily a weedable thing. It's just something I find kind of cool or interesting, But it's a chance to talk about things that aren't nonfiction on Friday.
We usually have at least 30 drafts in the queue ready to go at any given time, too.
Submissions are never a problem. You have plenty of
never.
Things coming in.
Nope.
You think it's going to drop off, it never does. So you guys touched on this a little bit. That what sort of the overarching mission of this? I mean, you're showing off these awful library books, but it's also sort of as a reason to show that weeding is important, collection development is important. And it seems like one of those things that librarians either love or hate is to weed. You get those librarians that love going out to weed, and those are the librarians that just hate to weed anything at all. Do you guys have a personal weeding philosophy that you go by?
Since I'm in a very small library and it's very tight in terms of space, it really has to what I call pull its weight. And sometimes that means being really rough on the collection in terms of, you know, breaking up, let's say, a beloved series. I use an example of Anne McCaffrey. She was an entire stack in my library, and frankly, some of them were not circulating as much anymore, but people were upset because it would break up the set or do that. But you have to make those choices at some point, because I was just getting to the point where we can't add another book without taking one off the shelf. And even that wasn't going to solve our problem.
I think that, well, we always joke that if the age of the people that the collection is for are older, you know, than intended, like if the books in the children's section are books that we loved when we were children, that collection is not for us anymore. So, you know, my philosophy is don't be emotional. Books are just things, and libraries are not in the business of collecting things. We provide information and access to information. We're not a museum. We don't collect things. So to be so emotionally attached to this physical book, this thing, that you can't bear to take it off the shelf. You know, you have to step back and not be so emotionally attached. And it is hard. We like books too, and it's harder to weed things that you bought than it is to weed things that the person, you know, your predecessor bought. But at some point, you just have to say, you know what, these books are not serving the audience they're intended for anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think that's the biggest problem, that people just get emotionally attached to the books and just can't get rid of them?
Absolutely.
I think there are a couple of personalities at work with weeding. There are the people that just can't stand it because it feels like waste, or I can't get rid of a book, there's something there, or they're hoarding type personalities. Also, I think a lot of us, especially if you're my age, think, I just bought that. And then you look at it and it's 15 years old. Just, I keep thinking, it can't be that old. And I wonder if we just kind of get lost in time a little bit.
Librarians just love their books, too. But I think one of the ways you can get around that is, and you guys have written about this a little bit, is to have like certain metrics that you use to decide what gets weeded. That way you kind of have hard data that you can say, okay, I'm emotionally attached to this book. I loved it as a child, but here's the facts that show it's not circulating. It's whatever. Can you talk about some of the metrics that you use to do weeding?
Oh, that's such a Mary question, because she lives and breathes this stuff. Like, she carries a shelf list in Excel around with her in her purse. She just loves it. I'm just going to pass the question to Mary, if that's okay.
All right, Mary.
You know, we don't really need to share all my foibles here. Actually, I do, because I think taking some of the emotion out of weeding, it can help, especially if you say, well, I loved that book, but no one's checked it out in 15 years. And to use a spreadsheet that says this one hasn't been touched in a while, you can either say, you know what, I better go out there and sell it if I think it's worth keeping. Or it might just have to say, okay, its time is done. And it kind of takes a lot of the emotion out of it. But yeah, I love my spreadsheets, and I look at numbers constantly. And it isn't just how many times it circled, but when it circled, who circled it, all those things. I think in a lot of libraries, its condition is a huge issue. I have seen more paperbacks being rescued by $14 worth of tape and 2 hours of labor than seriously, we can get another one. And it ends up costing more to rescue a book than it actually is to buy another copy.
And, you know, we also look at metrics like average age of the collection, median age of the collection, turnover.
One of the big issues I think about, too, is you can't look at the collection as a whole. You have to look at its pieces. For example, if we're in the medical section, I want to make sure that age is actually more important than things like condition or how many times it's served. We want to look at accurate medical information. So something that's older than 5 years is questionable. I didn't say it needs to be weeded. I just said it's questionable. You want to look closely at those ones that are older than 5 years that you want to keep. Maybe it does make a difference, maybe it doesn't, but you've got to look at that. So average age is helpful when you're looking at medical or legal or career information. Then you have things like CERC, which is probably best used for fiction, and things like that. Median is one of the more exciting things we can talk about, and that's where does your collection fall on the scale. So whatever the median is, you have 50% of those books that are date or newer than that date. And that can be absolutely illuminating because an average, you could have just enough new ones to kick the average up. But when 90% of your collection is older than 20 years, you got a problem.
You guys actually do a lot of presenting on this same topic of collection development and weeding. How often would you say you guys do a presentation at a conference or something like that?
It's kind of seasonal because a lot of libraries do spring workshops and a lot of libraries do fall workshops or conferences. So we might do, we have two at the end of April, and then we have one in October. So over the course of a year, maybe 8 or 10 different things, both within our own state and, you know, around the country. I'd say maybe 8 or 10 a year, but they're clumped together. So we do a lot in the spring, and we do a lot in the fall.
You guys also have on your site that you will also do consulting. Do you do consulting with individual libraries, or is that part of your presentations, or how does that work?
We do staff in services quite a bit. We never have done a real, like, come and look at our collection and help us weed it or help us create a collection management plan. We would love to do that.
I was going to say, that was kind of how I got hooked into my current library, is I started out consulting for them on their collection, and then all of a sudden I'm working there. So it just kind of dovetailed. It started out as a couple of months of, let me clean up your collection and fix some records and weed. And then the next thing I know, I'm a children's librarian. And my life has been dramatically changed.
We would love to do more of that consulting kind of stuff, though, where we come and maybe hold workshop-y type things on how to update your collection development policy, or a library that's moving and having to put things in storage. Nobody wants to put a bunch of stuff in storage that's not worth storing. So we'd love to do more of that.
Yeah, a lot of times storage libraries seem to be the solution people come up with, because it seems like that's a way to, well, I still get to keep all my stuff, I just don't have to keep it on site. But sometimes you just have to suck it up and toss it.
Yeah, what a waste.
It all goes back to, what is the collection mission? You know, if you're supposed to be current and on top of things, the old stuff really isn't part of it.
Well, I mean, eventually all public libraries will only have room for James Patterson books on our shelves anyway. I always hate that, because he writes so much, but then it always continues to circ. So it's like, well, I can't get rid of him because it's still popular. All of it.
Yep.
But I don't want my mystery section. Mystery section to just be a James Patterson section, but.
Here's the thing, though. If it's circulating, it really isn't on the shelf, and it isn't a space consideration to the extent you might think it is.
Right.
It's the stuff that has got a layer of dust on it and hasn't moved. So something that's high circling isn't really taking up as much shelf space as you might think. But I've weeded down my James Patterson a little bit. So, you know, some of his older stuff that aren't pulling their weight anymore, we're going to just do that. And if somebody said, I can get it from Interloan.
So one of the presentations you guys do is based on your book, Making a Collection Count. And what I like actually about that is your subtitle? Is it the holistic approach to library collection management? Can you talk about that, why you decided to, holistic, why you decided to use that term?
Yes, we believe that it's really easy to get stuck between selecting and weeding and selecting and weeding, and that boils down to collection development for a lot of people. We want people to look library-wide across different departments, you know, at the people who order the things and the people that catalog them and the people that put the labels on them. All of that contributes to collection management. And so if everybody can see the bigger picture of how what their little piece of the action, you know, relates to the whole collection and its success, you know, the label guy puts the wrong label on it or the cataloging guy links it to the wrong record, the whole thing falls apart. So in order to be a truly successful collection, it has to be paid attention to throughout what we call its life cycle. And that includes everything from selecting it, buying it, cataloging it, you know, labeling it, circulating it, shelving it, everything. That's what being a holistic collection management is paying attention to everything that happens to the collection throughout its life cycle.
I think also when you think about holistically, how is the, you think about it in terms of just consuming information. Maybe you don't need a book on something because you have something else, a program that's regular for something else. So you think of the library as a whole, programming as part of what you offer to the public, books, downloadable audios, videos. You know, I kind of think that sometimes when we were moving into more video, things like home repairs were better suited to something like a video because you could see it and kind of watch it happen. So how it's delivered can make a huge difference in thinking about your library as a customer, the library people as customers. What's really the best way to consume information?
Can you talk a little bit about what you guys do at your individual libraries? Like, what's your, Holly, what is your job at your library?
My title is the Adult Services Coordinator. It just means I'm the head of the Adult Services Department. So I manage the librarians, the reference assistants, and the interns that work in Adult Services and their projects. I do maintain two collections myself, three collections, sorry. And, you know, I work with interns quite a bit. I work at the reference desk quite a bit. I teach a class from time to time, a computer class. That's about it.
I'm a youth services librarian, which is a change for me. I used to be adult services when I was working with Holly. So I don't know how that... I will say youth services is much harder than adult services, and I know all the adult services librarians are going to cry about that, but it is. It's harder.
It's true.
And so my library is very small, like I said, and that has to do everything. So to say I've done everything from like move a dead animal carcass all the way to fix a toilet to wait on customers, circulate. I mean, just about everything you can think of. Story times, the whole nine yards and more. And so do my coworkers. I couldn't last 2 minutes without, you know, how much they support me in my trials and tribulations with youth services, but the whole library, we all kind of pitch in together.
Yeah, I think the removing animal carcasses was my favorite class in library school.
They should have taught one.
I was going to ask for the title of animal control officer too, because I've actually pulled an animal or two out of the book drop.
You guys are also contributors to the Library Lost and Found site. Can you talk about what that site is and what kind of stuff you guys write for that site?
Kevin King is the brains behind Library Lost and Found. And he's from the Kalamazoo Public Library, and so he asked us to be contributors. It's really wide open. We can write about whatever we want. It is about leadership, so we tend to write about things that, you know, we like to have to do with leadership. I know I'm really interested in personality types, you know, and how to get the best out of people and inspire people to do the best work that they can do. So that's just a personal kind of interest of mine. But it's really open. We can write about whatever we want. It's kind of a fun little gig. Mary?
I tend to like to write about things that just help you do your job better in that thing, whether that means managing up, managing down. Also, just how you present yourself professionally. There's a lot of topics that I don't think ever get addressed in library school, all the way down from crazy people to, how do I dress for a library job? What's the best way to approach a problem? I think so much of what we do as librarians is more about people management rather than information. And you can't, that's just has to be an essential part of what we do as a librarian.
Well, we started out talking about that the blog has been around for 5 years. Do you see it being around in 5 more years?
We keep saying it has to die. We keep saying it has to die, and yet it never does. It just, we keep getting these submissions, and we keep being surprised, and we keep laughing about it. So we'll keep it around as long as there's material to be had.
As long as bad books are being published.
That's right. It'll work for you. Kept around in libraries.
All right, Mary and Holly, thank you so much for talking to me for the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Loved it.
If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at @CircIdeas, or on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show at circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time. That's all right. It was just a joke.
Okay. I'm sure it was funny.
Just laugh and I'll add that in.
Okay, edit my laugh in.
Do you guys have a preference as to who gets named first? Are you Mary and Holly, or Holly or Mary, or you don't care?
We're interchangeable. Yeah. I'd like to think I'm the most important person in the room, but...
Oh my God, just name her first then.
Okay.